Who is your daddy?
I am your father.
You fathers will understand.
My father taught me many things.
I got an idea. How about you all sit there quietly while I make dad noises?
Hey guys, welcome to the show. This is episode zero. We'll call it our test show. For those of you getting on the ground floor, welcome. We're glad to have you. And I have with me my friend Derek Teague. Derek, say hello.
Hello.
That was weird. My name is Tim Nestor, and Derek and I have been gaming together throughout most of 2015, and we decided that since we're both full-time working dads, we've got families with young kids, we've got busy schedules, and yet we still carve out time to game, it'd be great to start sitting down and chatting about gaming and life as gaming dads. And so that's what this is. So if you can relate it all to what it means to be a gamer and have other life responsibilities, I think you'll find something to relate to with our conversation. And if this keeps going, it'd be great to hear from you as well, what your life is like as a gamer, whether you're a parent or not, whether you are in a relationship and are trying to fit in gaming with those things, or just have regular life, work, school responsibilities. It's just one of those tough things to balance. So that's kind of the foundation of what we want to do, but also we want to make fun of each other and talk about games.
Absolutely.
So first of all, before we get going into our gaming conversation, I thought it would be good for us to get to know each other a little bit, so each of you get to know Derek and I a little bit. So Derek, let's start with you. Just give me some high-level basics. Make sure it's super interesting. Tell me about yourself, like where you live, what do you do for a living, and maybe some things about your family.
Absolutely, and you might get a cat growling in the background there.
Nice.
So that'll be great. I'm 36. I'm married with three kids. My daughter is the oldest. She's about ready to turn 12, actually, in about a week. And then I have two sons. One's 9 and the other one's 7. They're all pretty much into gaming, and we'll talk about that later on. But I work right now at Chase Retirement Services, so I'm paying out a lot of funds to really old people and dealing with the IRS, which is pretty cool. And that's about it.
Nice. And so you said your kids like gaming. What about your wife? Does your wife get into gaming at all?
She does not. She, I can't really, I mean, when we were dating, we used to play games together, but now she's more into maybe a casual game on her phone or something like that, but never. I can't ever get her to sit down on a console or a PC or anything like that.
I gotcha. So if she had a controller in her hand and you put on, let's say, anything basic on the PS4, some kind of multiplayer game that most people could pick up and play, would she be able to be familiar enough with the controller to give it a go? Is it just a choice that she's not really into it, or is it completely foreign to her at this point, do you think?
I'm pretty sure she would try to break my controller. That would be her attempt.
Man, that is love.
Yeah, she's a big fan. Love. You know, she loves Rocket League too. Big fan.
Well, I don't want to copy everything you just said, but we have a lot of similarities there in that I'm 33, so I'm not as old as you. You're super old. But I am also married. I have 5 kids, better than you. I have an 8-year-old, 6-year-old, twins that are 4, and a 2-year-old. All of them love games, and my wife actually is super into games too. They just happen to be, like, none of them are on consoles. She and I did used to game a lot back in the dating and early marriage years, things like retro Mario and Donkey Kong Country. Love that stuff. And she's actually pretty good at Mario, like the old school Mario games. But
we actually, I actually have, not to cut you off, well, actually
no,
I was totally trying to cut you off, but I actually have like a funny, well, I'll just share it. Back when we were dating, my wife and I was big into NCAA football games. Like, I was big into sports games. And so maybe it was because we were dating and we weren't married, so she was being fake, maybe. And she would actually play the college football game with me all the time. And we're both very, very competitive. So we would have these epic battles of Florida versus Michigan, and you know, we would just fight the entire time. And it was very stressful because she would she was actually pretty good. She actually got really good at college football. So, yeah, she used the game, and she actually was pretty good with the Xbox 360 controller.
Sounds like she is just a few key game experiences away from being sucked right back in. I feel like you need to dig into this a little more.
Yeah, I'm going to start recruiting her for Rocket League nights.
Do that. Do that. We will talk about Rocket League a lot in this opening episode, too. I guarantee that. I mean, my wife would never play something like that, like a sports game like that. She's tried a lot of different kinds of puzzle games, any kind of board game or any kind of platformer. If it's 2D scrolling platformer, she'll give it a go. She and I actually played from start to finish Castle Crashers on the 360 when that first came out.
Yeah,
so she loves that kind of stuff. If it's multiplayer, if it's side scrolling, she can play that. So
sweet.
My kids love gaming. They all have some sort of DS, except for our 2-year-old. She just kind of grabs whatever's nearby. She doesn't own one herself yet. But all the boys have their own little DS systems, and I'm introducing them to things like Mario and Sonic. One of my boys loves Sonic. Nintendogs, Pokemon, basically everything Nintendo has ever put out. And they've re-released. So yeah, the family does love gaming. I, of course, am the biggest gamer of all of us. I work for a marketing company here in Ohio called Upward. I was going to not really tell you the name of my company, so I don't know if I'd ever get in trouble for that. I don't know why I wouldn't do that. You could find it on LinkedIn just by searching for my name, so it's no secret. So yeah, we do all sorts of digital marketing stuff. So I'm always on the internet, always online. So that's what I do for a living. But most of my time and energy outside of work, and sometimes during work, is spent reading about, talking about, writing about, and then playing games. So it's by far my favorite hobby. So I'm going to take that right into my first gaming console. The first console that I owned was an Atari 2600. Back in 1986.
Nice. Yeah. Nice.
So it was 86. I believe by that point the Nintendo system was already out. But my family was a little behind the times. We had never played it before. Like, we didn't know anything about it. But Christmas of 86, my brother and I got an Atari 2600, where we first got to experience things like Asteroids and Frogger and Pitfall.
Frogger.
Just some absolute classics. What was your first gaming console?
I actually had a Commodore and the NES. So for a console, I would say Nintendo Entertainment System would be the first one I had, which obviously the standard games that you would play on it, you know, the Marios. I was a big Mario Brothers 3 fan. I knew all the secrets. I mean, obviously now everybody knows who's ever played it, but back then it was a big deal because I'm going to show my age a little bit. I guess I did already tell my age.
You did.
You know, the internet wasn't around, so there wasn't, you know, guides or anything to tell me about secrets. So discovering all those secrets of those games, playing those on over and over, was what I did all the time. And Nintendo Entertainment System was definitely the first system that I had, and then it went from there to the Super NES and so on, but...
What was your first game that you remember playing ever? The first video game you remember seeing or playing?
It would have to... I mean, again, I'm going to ignore the Commodore. Because I honestly don't remember if we owned it or my cousin. I was real close to my cousin growing up. Our families were real close. So I was always going over there and playing on his PCs and Commodores and so on. But I believe we owned one too. But anyways, ignoring those. My favorite game... when I was young, on the Nintendo Entertainment System would definitely be Mario Brothers 3, unless I'm forgetting something. I just remember playing Super Mario Brothers 3 a lot. And then the game that I always immediately, my brain goes to right away, would be for the Super NES, A Link to the Past.
Oh, so good.
Kind of going back to what I was saying, back then... Well, at least for me, I didn't buy games as much as I do now, because granted, I was probably 7, so chances of me buying a game are slim to none, since I didn't have a job.
Well, you were more financially wise back then.
Yes. Those five pennies didn't exactly add up to $70. But, you know, when I did get a game, like a Zelda or whatever, I would just literally sit there and play it over and over, like... And we'll talk about this later. Spoilers. Link to the Past. I probably put in, and I'm just guessing here, hundreds of hours. And I can say to this day, I have not beaten that game. And
what?
A lot of
you've
it
never
was...
Hang on. You've never beaten The Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past?
No. It's one of my favorite Zelda games. I probably would have said a year or two ago that it actually was my favorite, but I never, ever beat it. I just remember getting really far. Again, man. I did it without a guide, and I did it with my brother, and my brother and I would just play over and over, and if we'd get stuck, we would just start the game over.
Oh, man, that final battle is so hard. Well, not so hard. As a kid, though, playing it, I felt it was so hard. It's like the hardest thing I've ever had to do. As a kid, I remember playing that final battle. You've got to finish that game. Oh my! You can't call it your favorite game. I'm going to call you out right now. It can't be your favorite game. Actually, we didn't even get to favorite game yet. What was your very first game that you remember playing that, like, you have any kind of memory? Like, okay, I actually hit a button and there was a reaction, an action on the screen when I did this.
I think it's Super Mario Brothers. I think it's
okay. The first one.
Yeah, which obviously is a classic, and I still enjoy. I think I have it on my 3DS, and I have it on the Wii U Virtual Console, and so I can go back to it anytime I want, which I don't because I just don't have time. But it's a classic, and that's the game I remember playing from the very beginning, and then it kind of expanded from there. And once we did get a Super NES, Zelda, and Mortal Kombat 2 became my big games back in the day.
My very first game was Asteroids for the Atari 2600. And I just remember it really, really vividly for two reasons. One, it was the first time that I remember feeling like I had control over something, like the joystick and the single button controllers that we had for that Atari. There was something about that just was like, I don't know how this works. It's like magic. I moved the joystick and my little triangle piece floats around in space wherever I want it to go, and it had this really cool feeling to it, the way it would fly across the screen. And then of course you hit your little button to shoot your little dot lasers at the rocks, the asteroids that are flying all over the screen. Super simple.
I've never played the game.
Yeah,
isn't that kind of a spoiler? There's asteroids in a game called
That is a spoiler. And you know what? Here's another spoiler. You can split them in half every time you hit them, and they become smaller asteroids. And every time you hit those smaller ones, they split. And every time you hit those, they split.
I mean, is that the ending of the game, or is that like the plot twist? Like,
well, I don't want to tell you, but the asteroid is your father.
Oh,
sorry to drop that on you.
That's awesome. All right.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah, it's a great twist. Stolen a little bit, but it's a good twist.
Yeah.
But I remember like the idea of that game. I don't remember if it had an ending. I that's not my favorite game, so I'm not going to be like you and say it's my favorite because I never beat it. So I'm not going to be false, like a false.
Hey, I thought I was talking about like our favorite games from back in the day.
It's too bad.
Of all time,
can't take it back.
Sure, I like A Link to the Past, but there's. I mean, we'll talk about
favorite games of all time in a minute. Let's do that. Let's do that in a minute. But for right now, just like first gaming experiences, and you did a good job of summing up like, okay, Mario might have been first, but the ones that stand out to you as major first experiences were Mario 3, Zelda. So for me, the very first one was Asteroids, and it was fun. Like you go off the screen to the right, and then your ship pops up on the left side of the screen. So it's just like a forever scrolling thing. And same thing with Pitfall, same thing with Frogger. So those are my first memories of gaming, but the one that sticks out to me the most as the one that kind of, I don't know if changed my life is over dramatic, but the one that made me go from this is kind of neat and new into this is going to be part of my life for a long time wasn't until we got the Super Nintendo and I played Super Mario World. That's when I finally was like, okay, this is going to be a part of who I am moving forward. Like,
okay, we're talking about Mario and we brought up Super Mario Brothers 3, Super Mario Brothers, and now you're bringing up which one's the Super NES one?
It's World, Super Mario World.
Super Mario Worlds. Okay, I didn't remember the title, but I remember loving that game.
Yeah, they introduced Yoshi. It was just amazing.
So
yeah.
Then I'm gonna ask you, and not to get too far off topic, you can go back. What's your favorite Mario game of all time? Like Mario game.
Okay. Okay, if I have to pick only one, I'm going to go with Super Mario World, probably just because of the place it holds in my mind and in my life as like that moment that gaming really hit home. And I think it still plays and looks fantastic.
It does.
As a 16-bit side-scrolling platformer. It's great. Like, my kids have, we've played it on the virtual console on the Wii, and they love it. Like, as far as they're concerned, it's like, oh, is this a new Mario game? Like, they don't know it's not one of the new Super Mario Brothers series that's going on right now. It's really, really great, and it plays beautifully. So that one, but there are a few others, too, that kind of completely changed the way I look at games. Like, Mario 64 was a pretty big benchmark, and seeing 3D, like, using that joystick to go in a 3D circle with Mario, that was
kind of insane. Did you play Galaxy games at all? Galaxy 1 or 2?
Yeah, I played both Galaxies. I liked 2 more, but 1 was more of a revelation as far as, like, what it could do and how it looked. And
yeah.
The orchestral music was really great. That soundtrack is shocking. Like, it's really good. But yeah, no, Galaxies are good. The only one I didn't play that I can think of, there's two that I haven't played recently. One is the second one for the 3DS, the new Super Mario Brothers 2 with all the gold coins.
Yeah.
My son has that one, but I haven't ever played it. And then Sunshine for the GameCube. I never played that one.
Yeah. Well, guess what my favorite Mario game is?
Please be Sunshine.
It's absolutely Sunshine.
Tell me about that game. Tell me why that's your favorite Mario game.
I will say it's, I don't know. First of all, I love the GameCube. It's a special console to me.
Agreed. But
I remember, and you're probably going to hear a lot of stories about my cousin, because that's who I gamed with. But
can we get him on the show? I'm tired of talking to you. Let's get him on the show.
Yeah, I'm sure he'd be real thrilled. Who is this again? Suck it. but I remember I probably bought Sunshine on day one, because that was back when I started my buying games day one, every game that exists. And I remember not really getting into it. Maybe I'd kind of grown out of Mario games, and then him and I were hanging out or whatever or something, and he started playing it, and we kind of just did that whole pass the controller back and forth every time you die. And yeah. I got sucked into it, and we ended up eventually beating it, you know, over a couple days time. And it just became this classic to me, that it's a game that I can keep going back to. I won't try to beat it or anything like that again, but I like to go back to it for the nostalgia and just play, like, those opening 4 or 5 levels, and just the lighting, the graphics. I can't say the GameCube games still hold up to a certain extent compared to Xbox and PlayStation 2. Like, I won't say recently, probably a couple years ago, bought a PlayStation 2 back, and I had my Xbox, and I had them all hooked up, and I was like, whoa, I'll play Final Fantasy X again. And I put it in, and I was like, ugh, this is disgusting.
Oh,
but
see, there's certain PS2 games that still hold up, though. But most of them, you're
right. I will say the Final Fantasy games overall of them does hold up the best. But my point is, compared to the GameCube, which I still had hooked up, and I still had, you know, the Zelda game and Soul Calibur and Mario Galaxy and so on, those, the lighting, the color palette, just everything about the GameCube, it's not that it was a more powerful system, it's just the artistic design of those games just still holds up. So that is my favorite Mario game. I do,
and that was the first one, the first major Mario after 64, right? Or am I missing one? Wasn't that the first one after
64? I believe, if we're talking about, like, you know, the 3D platformers, yes.
Yeah, I don't even know if they came out with the major 2D release. They might have. I know they did. That's when they really started pumping out the Mario Sports games for both 64, and then going into the GameCube years, they were everything from Mario Soccer to Mario Tennis, Mario Baseball.
Good games,
Mario Party. Mario Golf. Those are all great. But if I remember correctly, after 64, other than all those kind of spin-off side games, I don't know that they had anything until Sunshine. So Sunshine was, like, finally Mario's back. And I know that a lot of people at first didn't love it. They were like, I want my old Mario 64 back, or as they called it, Mario 128. I don't know if you remember that back in the day. I did play it a little bit. I never owned it. I did not get anywhere close to beating it. I put a little bit of time into it. My younger brother owned a GameCube, which is how I played most of my GameCube games. But Mario Sunshine didn't really grab me. I mean, I liked the jetpack with the water. I thought that had some cool, like, puzzle-solving elements to it and some cool movement to it. But that was a long time ago. I wonder if I were to ever revisit it, if Yeah, if maybe I'd think differently about it. I don't know.
You would, because I would force you to.
That's the way to play games.
Since we've decided to talk about Mario, I will just mention one more Mario game that's kind of special to me. Besides, you know, the ones that I've already mentioned. But Super Mario 3D World on the Wii U is phenomenal. It is absolutely phenomenal. As a person who, and let me just come out and say this, I do not like platformers really anymore. I find them to be boring and frustrating, so I don't tend to play them.
This is called Platform Cast. This is the wrong show for you.
Like Ori and the Blind Forest, I can't say how I feel about it because I'll be using bad language, but I'm not a big fan of those type of games. But Mario 3D World is fun, and it's definitely a game. It's probably one of the last games that I sat down and really played with my daughter.
Okay, nice.
Speaking of, you know, games that our kids play and that, you know, that we also play with them, Mario 3D World is one of those games that I have a lot of good memories playing with my daughter. We also enjoyed a few other Wii U titles. That's mainly what I use my Wii U for, is to play with the kids.
Sure, sure. So that's why I need to get one.
So yeah, will tell you to get an Xbox One first, but that's just me.
Well, we can get into that. But
yeah, we'll talk about that
later. I thought you were going to say Mario 3D Land, and I got real excited because I do love what they did with the Mario 3DS. That
3D
was great.
Land is actually a really good game, and it's very, very similar to 3D World. 3D World is just prettier, moves a little bit faster because it's got better frames per second, and it's just a lot of fun. You know, the co-op.
Did you beat 3D Land on the 3DS? Did you get to the end of it?
I did. My daughter and I beat that one together too. We did the kind
of. Did you like the moment when you finished the first 8 worlds and you're like, I got it. I guess that was it. This is kind of easy.
And then they have you continue going. Yeah, I think we beat the first 8 worlds, and I was like, oh, I beat the game. And then my daughter's like, yeah, it's still going. And I'm like, yeah, but I'm done. So.
Yeah, you beat the first 8, and then a whole new 8 worlds open up.
Yeah.
And they're all significantly harder. So
Way harder.
I love that game.
Yeah, too, so I guess I should say, did I beat it? I beat what they showed me I thought I was supposed to beat, and then beyond that, I kind of retired.
Yeah, you didn't beat it. Okay, so I think we've covered some Mario, and I think it's fair to say, even if I can't think of one single Mario game that would get close to what I would consider my favorite game of all time, all consoles of any type. But that being said, that Mario franchise, the Mario series, I can't think of any other series or franchise that has consistently over the years put out games that I would love as much as the Mario game series. Like, that's probably the only series that just about every entry is like, yep, that's nearly a perfect game. Like, it's
Zelda.
Just great. I mean, Zelda's up there too, but some of the handheld versions they've come out with, like on the DS specifically, have kind of made me... Yeah, like I played Skyward Sword for like 5 minutes, and Skyward Sword wasn't doing it for me either, so...
Yeah, and I think that's because Zelda games are, you know, they can tend to drag a little bit, which we will definitely talk about later. But I think right now what we should do, kind of give everybody out there who's listening an idea of where we're going from here. That was kind of our intro into... who we are, our families, and some of our first experiences with games and games that our kids like and so on. But what we wanted to do in this show is kind of cover 2015. Since we're getting the opportunity to start our show in the beginning of 2016, 2015 was an amazing year. There's a lot of news stories that we're going to cover. Maybe quickly, maybe we'll talk in depth, who knows, but we have a bunch written down. We also want to cover the games that Tim and I like the most, so we're definitely going to do that. And we'll end up probably covering games that disappointed us the most. And then we want to look forward to 2016, kind of give a preview of what we're thinking going into it, and then I think that's the direction we're heading in.
Yeah. Yeah, so 2015 was, for me, a really, really great year as far as gaming goes, on a personal level, too. Like, it was a good year for our family, which is great. As you heard earlier, I've got 5 kids, so not adding an additional kid is always a successful year. So and that on those terms, it was good.
That but also, is a victory.
That's a win, man. I mean, in terms of tax season, not a win. That would have been nice, but in every other way, in every other possible way, it's a win.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, but as far as gaming goes, lots of great stuff. At least for me personally, in 2015. Just on a quick personal note, I bought my PS4 this year. It's the first time I jumped into the next generation of consoles here, or current gen, I guess, now of consoles. That was great. I've caught up on some games from last year and earlier. I was a Wii and Xbox 360 combo owner, never owned a PS3. My last PlayStation system was a PS2, and I was a huge fan of that. And PS1, I loved that as well. And then when the next systems rolled out, I bought in on the 360 and on the Wii. So there's a lot of games that I've missed out that I'm starting to catch up on. So I've had a blast this year. People who have been purchasing the new PlayStation systems as they've come out and got every game as it's come out, to them that might feel like, yeah, it's been a decent year, it's been pretty solid. For me, it felt like the best year of gaming in like a decade, just because there's so much all of a sudden that I've got available to play. So
no, I have similar feelings about 2015. I thought it was a phenomenal year. It was one I try to, you know, I do it more now because we actually have community set up where we talk to people about games, whereas back in the day, you know, I had my cousin, you know, but
yeah,
you know, obviously, I didn't have an outlet to talk about games. But anyways, the point is picking like my top 10 for this year, stuff like that, it like I've said before, you ask me today, I'll give you a top 10. You ask me tomorrow, it's going to change. Because when I sit there and think about it, I'm like, oh, but this game was awesome. And it was a phenomenal year. Almost every month there was something releasing that was just something I had to have or had to play.
Well, I think it should be that way as far as the games that hit you. They should kind of change over time. And you know, you should be able to say, you know, this is something that I loved then when I played, and then I revisited it now, it just didn't strike me the same way. And that's just based on what your interests are at that time, what time, you know, what kind of free time you have, what's going on in your personal life, what strikes you in an emotional way as far as story goes, all those kind of things.
Cutscenes.
Yeah, it makes sense that your list would change.
You have to have cutscenes.
The cutscenes, you gotta have that story. You gotta have that story.
Alright, so before we jump into the news stories for 2015, I had... Yeah. You know, as I'm listening to you talk, I'm actually listening to you.
Thanks,
I have
buddy.
To ask, why didn't you buy a PlayStation 3?
Two big reasons. Yeah, two big reasons. Number one, the price point was
deal. It was terrible when it first launched.
It was horrible. And I was pretty tuned in to the E3s, to the major announcements throughout the year. I have been, you know, since they've been doing them, basically. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, just seeing how that all played out, what I thought was, at least for me as a consumer and as someone who followed the industry, it played out like arrogance, and it really put me off. I really didn't like the messaging coming out of Sony. I didn't like the way that they talked to me as a consumer, as a gamer. I liked what 360 was doing. I liked the way they talked about, because I didn't own an original Xbox either. So that was my chance. I thought, okay, I'll catch up on some old Xbox games, because they talked about some backwards compatibility there. And so it seemed to me to be the right time to jump over. It was cost effective. It seemed to be the place to go to play online based on the track record from the original Xbox. So, and I had several friends who jumped in before I did with 360.
Yeah, that always helps.
You know what? I'm going to jump into this too. So I didn't buy it at launch, but when I did make that jump, it was pretty obvious to me which one to go with. So that's why I don't have a good reason why I didn't buy one later, other than I felt like I was hitting my gaming quota. Like I had plenty of games available to me. There wasn't a ton on the PS3. There were games, but there wasn't a ton that I just was dying to play. I had not yet experienced Uncharted at that point, so I didn't know what I was missing out on.
Yeah.
Metal Gear Solid 4, I was like, it was one of those games that I knew I'll play someday. And you know what's funny? I still haven't played that. I need to play that game.
Oh, you don't actually play that game. You just kind of watch it.
Well, cutscenes. I love cutscenes. So anyway, that's why I didn't buy a PS3. It really had to do with price, as well as just the 360. It advertised to me in a way that spoke to me. So, yeah, I went for it.
So you're like a hard sell, whereas I'm I'm the guy that they can literally tell you that they pooped in this box, and they're going to sell it to me for $500, and I'm like, all right, where do I pre-order this? Because I didn't get a PS3 day one, but this is, and I'm not going to go on a long tangent, but I wasn't able to get a 360 or a PS3 on day one, but it was not from a lack of trying. Now, the internet was invented at this time, and I remember the night that the 360 launched, 12 o'clock, well, I was actually on earlier than that, I was on BestBuy.com. It was like, you know, 11 o'clock when I started this. And I was waiting to see if I could buy it at 12 o'clock. This is how stupid I was. So I kept refreshing the page. And I kept refreshing and refreshing. Long story short, it never became available. It was already sold out. It never
even
showed up.
How long did you wait? How long after midnight did you keep refreshing?
I want to say it was around like 2 in the morning. When I finally went,
that's so sad.
I don't think I'm going to get a 360. So I ended up having to, this is how I'm going to show you, or I'm going to let you and all the listeners know how terrible I am with my money and with video games. But I couldn't find a 360 in the store at all. I can't remember how long it had been out. I want to say it was out for about 2 months. It was absolutely killing me. I had to have it. I wanted it so bad that I ended up buying it on eBay for $650 when it was selling for $300 or $400.
Yeah,
I don't know the exact number. I just know I paid over $250 to $300 more than what it was worth.
Good choice.
Yes, yes. So, you know, I'm obviously really good at investing my money in the wrong places. So that's how I got that. Quick story on the PS3. I wanted that one day one as well. Again, they said they crapped in the box and it was $600, and I was like, sold! So,
well, you had already spent $650 on the other one, and it wasn't worth that. So why not $600? You thought you were getting a deal on the PS3.
I was definitely interested in the games on the PS3, more so on the 360 at the time. And I did want it on day one, because again, that's how I was. I did this with the PS2, original Xbox, all that. I tried to buy them on day one. But again, the day and age that we live in now, I can pre-order something 6 months, year early, and I'm guaranteed day one. Back then, it wasn't that way. I couldn't pre-order. So with the PlayStation 3, I actually didn't have the money. There was no way for me to get it. So I would walk into Best Buy, and I would just stare at it. And I'd be like, how am I going to get this? And I finally, I think maybe I got a tax return or something like that. And I begged my wife, this is probably when we were first married, maybe a couple years in. I was like, please let me get this. And I had this 10% off coupon. Now, the 10% off coupon was for only software. So my game plan was to pay $600 for this PS3. And then I was definitely going to buy Resistance Fall of Man. So I go in there, I grab the PS3, I grab the game. I've decided I'm going to spend this $650 plus tax on both these things with my 10% off. Well, the lady who rang me up, she actually gave me 10% off the system. So even back in the day, I was freaking getting deals. So I got I got the PS3 for the cheap, low price of $540 plus tax. And then I got Resistance Fall of Man for $60 plus tax. So I
don't know what makes me more sad is you sitting there refreshing your 2005 internet for the 360 until 2 in the morning until you realize it's not going to work, or you walking into the Best Buy store day after day to look at something you know you're not going
to
buy.
And I'm not even exaggerating. I had to have done this like multiple times. And any time we'd go to a store that sold it, if you were at a Walmart, I would go to the electronics department and just stare at the box.
I like to imagine that you, as you're in the store, you would, as you're looking at it, you look down at your pockets and you pull them inside out, so they're kind of hanging out like little floppy ears, and then you just kind of hang your head as you walk out of the store, and the sad music plays. That's what I'm imagining right now. I hope that's accurate.
How much is it for a pee? What? How much will it be for if I just want a pee? A PS3? No. I just want a pee. Yeah, that was me. I didn't have enough money, so, you know. But that's my little tangent on how obsessive, it gives you a little insight, how obsessive I am with consoles, with games in general. I like to own them. I like to play as many games as possible. So it's one of the reasons why I wanted to do a podcast like this, is because I love to talk about games, and I love to tell people how crappy they are, how good they are, and more than likely, if it's released, I got it. So,
what you've just shared has explained a lot about our interactions in the last several months. Like, now I get it. Okay, got it. He's crazy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Totally understand. Yeah. I never bought a PS3. I don't have a sad story like that. I don't even have a happy story on how I got a PS3. So I am one of those few people who the PlayStation Now service actually has some draw for me. Like, once I hit maybe like a slower moment with newer games coming out,
That's not happening.
Let me finish the sentence. That's something I'm actually considering, and buying you a subscription so you can play too. Isn't that gonna be great? Are you excited?
No, I'm good. I'll just go buy me another PS3.
All right, fair enough.
I actually don't own a PS3 right now, and it kind of bothers me. I still shop online for it. I'm waiting for it to drop to 100 for a 500 gigabyte. Which, another sad story. This past holiday, Black Friday, GameStop had for like 2 days, they had their used 500 gigabyte PlayStation 3s for $99.99, and because I was buying gifts for those dang kids, I was not able to buy it. And then when I finally had the $100, I had it, I got it, I went back on their website, I was like, they gotta have it, you know, because it was just a few days ago. Nope, sale was over. And they went back to their normal price of like $180 for a used 500 gigabyte, which I'm not gonna do. That's too expensive. But I will get my PS3 back.
If someone is looking for a sweet story of a dad who sold all of his games because he loved his kids so much just to give them the best Christmas they've ever had, this is not the place to come and hear that story. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so let's get to freaking 2015 year in.
Yeah, here's what I was thinking we could do for the news stories. We don't necessarily have to cover everything. I mean, anyone listening to this probably already follows the gaming industry. They know all these. They're going to hear our opinions on them, whether they want to hear them or not. But I figure we could just kind of take turns going back and forth, maybe covering, I don't know, anywhere from 3 all the way up to 5 or 6 of the biggest things that each of us thought were big deals this year in the industry, whether it was a news thing or maybe just a trend or something like that. Let's just take turns saying, like, you know, we can just share something that we thought was a big deal. And then once we cover anywhere from 3, maybe 5 of those each, then we can move on to our big games of the year.
Okay, well, one of the topics that I would, well, a couple of them I'd like to talk about with, and again, these are news stories, we're not talking about video games right now, is the VR hype for the PlayStation 4. We're going to have a PlayStation VR. We're actually finally getting details on it. I am one of those, oh my gosh, this is going to be a big shocker, who wants to buy it day one. And again, they could probably tell me it's $600-$700, and I will go to GameStop and put the $50 down to reserve it and then slowly pay it off or trade in games that I no longer own anymore to buy it.
I only said PlayStation VR. What's your hype level for the Oculus Rift?
No real desire for the Oculus Rift. The main reason is I don't have a PC. I have a Alienware Alpha. I have the highest end alpha, but it's still not a real high, it's not a high-end PC. It's like, I would say, if somebody's listening to this who's a PC Master Race, first of all, they're shaking their head that I bought this. They're very mad at me because I bought this.
They've already destroyed whatever device they were using to listen to this, so don't worry about it.
They're already judging me.
Yeah.
But the point is it's very mediocre when it comes to specs. It's the way I describe it to people is if I'm playing a game that's on the PS4 and Xbox One as well on my Alpha console, it would play at a little bit of a higher level. The main reason I wanted it, not to get too far off course here, but the main reason I wanted the Alpha was to be able to buy games that I owned on my 360 or PS3, obviously not exclusives when it comes to the PS3, but any games, third parties, or some Microsoft exclusives that also came out on PC, I wanted to be able to buy them and play them on PC and get them at 60 frames per second at 1080p, and I got that. That's what I got out of it. I'm able to get them, and I get them for cheap. I mean, there's been several games.
That's the thing of PC gaming for me that's a draw, is the sales, whether it's Humble Bundle or Steam, especially when they run their sales. I mean, it's just like Christmas Day every day when those sales go up.
So. I mean, the current Humble Bundle right now, like I just got an advertisement for it for today, was them basically bringing back their, I think it was the Tom Clancy one. And so you're getting all their Splinter Cell games, all their Rainbow Six games. We're talking 12 to 14 quality. I'm talking really good Tom Clancy titles. And I think if you pay $10 or more, you get them all.
That's crazy.
It's phenomenal. Crazy. I got like 12 games for $10. I did this when they originally posted it. This is just they re-released it. So if you are a PC Master Race or a PC gamer, go buy that Humble Bundle. It's definitely worth it.
I remember paying $70. I paid $70 for the N64 Rainbow Six game. So that deal, Humble Bundle,
absolutely ridiculous. And and the other thing is, I buy PC gaming, or I do PC gaming the little bit that I do, because I can get a brand new game that comes out on day one for $20 to $30, compared to if I'm going to buy it on my PS4, even with my Best Buy Gamer Club unlocked, you're going to pay $50 plus tax. So there's several games that, if they're not major games that I want to play with other people or even care if I play them on console, I'll buy them for the PC, and I'll get them for that $20 or $30. I bought Mad Max for $20. I just pre-ordered Dragon's Dogma. Had to throw that in there. Dragon's Dogma for $24. So those are the main reasons. But going back to what we were talking about with VR, sorry, apologize. Oculus Rift, I have no desire for it because, first of all, I don't have a PC that could handle it. And second of all, $600 plus having to buy a high-end PC, I'm looking at around $1,500, and I don't see the point in that. Yes, yeah. I've actually hit my limit, and I will say no to Oculus Rift.
Yeah, for those of you who haven't heard, the news just broke recently that Oculus Rift is going to sell for $600 initially. That's going to be its launch price. Now, for some people, they're saying, you know, look at the cost of a new iPhone or really of a PC. I mean, that's kind of the price of a low-end PC. And this is brand new tech. And there's lots of arguments to be made for it being that price. I think there's also good arguments for it being more of a fancy peripheral that you still need a console or a PC to play. So I can see both sides of it. I'm just really curious, once it's actually in the hands of consumers and not industry people that are giving us their impressions, once it's in the hand of consumers, what are people thinking? What are the games like? What games are they putting out for it? Are there any experiences that I just, quote unquote, need VR for? So I have not bought in on the hype for any type of VR yet. That doesn't mean I'm not interested in hearing more about it, but for me, that news story is more of, it's something that everyone is talking about in gaming, but it's, for me personally, it's not a big,
I like
not really hyped
the
up.
Potential I see in it, but I'll admit I was also really, and I know they're two separate things, but I was really excited for the Kinect when it came out on the 360, and my mom bought it for Christmas as a special surprise gift for me, even though I was an adult man. I was excited about that. Yeah. And I got it, and it was cool for literally 30 seconds, and then I was like, oh, I don't care about this at all.
Right.
So I do worry about...
That's my concern with it. That's why I'm still skeptical.
Yeah, I think VR is going to be cooler than Kinect. Again, I want to make sure people understand that I'm not stupid in saying, well, Kinect and VR are the same. No, they're not. But I just worry that I'll pay the $400, whatever it's going to be, for PlayStation's VR headset and love it the first hour, 2 hours, right, 3 hours, whatever, and then be like, oh, well, I would rather, kind of like a Wiimote. I don't touch Wiimotes at all. I hate them. They're disgusting to me. But back when they first released, I liked them. Now
Wii Sports was like a revelation. It was new. It was amazing. Yeah,
freaking love playing bowling and all that. Now I worry, you know, that's what I worry about it. Now, the big seller for me, this is the only game I've really paid attention to at all for PlayStation, would be Gran Turismo having that on VR. So that's...
Well, that touches on the thing for me that's still missing for this. So there's been lots of new tech that's come out over the years that I've been like, that sounds interesting. That sounds cool. Whether it's the newest version of the 3DS, you know, this new 3DS, which apparently has only had two or three games that you have to have that system for, maybe more than that, but not that many more. Or maybe it was Kinect, maybe it was Move, maybe it was the Vita as the entire system, where the technology is great, the environment they've built is great, but it doesn't get the software support. That's where I still will kind of pull back until I see and hear, okay, now there are experiences that I am really interested in that can only be had through this new tech. Now I'm starting to be sold. I'm not doubting the technology and how neat it is, and I think it'd be cool to go and try one out. Having one in my home, not sold on that yet, especially not at that cost. But that being said, that's definitely a big thing from 2015 was the conversation about VR. It's always an easy way, whether you're in a community or on a forum, if you go onto Reddit, if you're on a Facebook group, whatever communities you're involved with, and if you're talking gaming, if you start talking VR, you're going to get responses and opinions. So it's a big conversation in 2015.
There's definitely interest there. And as a person that obviously is not a hard sell compared to, I would say, Tim, you're a little bit harder of a sell by an Xbox One. I will say that even I am a little cautious at this point.
Well, I like to provide for my family and put them first, but you do whatever you need to do. That's fine.
If I have to sell one of my kids, it's going to happen.
So. Okay, that's fair. I might do that too.
I think you should.
I wasn't going to, but you just said that and you convinced me, so I'm on board. Well, let's move on to the next big news story from 2015. So I'll pick one out. One of the things that jumped out at me this past year was everything surrounding Konami. I am a big fan of the games that Konami has put out over the years. Everything from the old school Ninja Turtles games back on the NES to Contra, Castlevania. I love a lot of the old JRPGs from the SNES and early PS1 days, so games like Suikoden, I loved that. They've just had an amazing stable of games they put out over the years, and then I was introduced to Metal Gear Solid. I never played the original one on Nintendo, but I did play the first PS1 game, Metal Gear Solid, and man, like I love the games that they've put out over the years. And so all the news surrounding them involving, and I won't dig into all of it. Most of you have read about and heard about this ad nauseum, but just the reports of the work environment there, the way they treat their employees, the reports of how they're shifting away from video games. They removed themselves from the stock exchange. It started to look like maybe they were going to completely fold as a company, but then it came out that they were really going to focus on different types of products away from video games. And then, of course, all the drama around the Metal Gear Solid franchise and Hideo Kojima and his departure from the company, as well as the way they kind of controlled him all the way through the end of this year, this past year. So just a lot of shady things happening with Konami, and being a fan of that company over the years, or at least of the games they made. I guess I didn't really love them as a company, but I loved the products they were putting out. It was just sad to see that happen. So to me, that was a big development. When I look back at 2015, that was kind of the year that Konami fell pretty much completely off the radar. It was kind of their last hurrah was Metal Gear Solid 5. And now, you know, it's kind of sad, but a lot of companies that I've loved over the years in terms of gaming have come and gone. So it's not like the end of the world, but it is kind of a moment to pause and think back, and wow, that's a bummer. So for me, that's a little sad. Not the end of the world, but pretty sad.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I'll add to that is I'm a firm believer that, and I have no proof or anything, that Konami is not the only guilty party in all this. I do not think they are handling their business well, like you just said, all the reasons you've mentioned. But I definitely think, and this is again just my opinion, can't prove it with facts, that Kojima is what I would consider a diva. And I think he takes too long to create games. I understand what he's trying to create, and yes, I am a fan of Metal Gear Solid, but I think he's kind of like my favorite game designer, and that would be Ken Levine. He's another one, because they're like masterful, and they're not what you would call...
They're perfectionists.
Yes, and they're not what you would call a normal human being. They take too long to create these perfect video games, or at least in my opinion, for at least Ken Levine, perfect video games. And so that's why I think there was a fallout between Konami and Kojima, and again, just speculation, and that was they were saying the return on investment for what you put us through, it's just not there, and your crap's kind of getting old. And so,
well, in terms of business, it sounds like, and if Konami is like every other business in the world,
they are,
then they are in the business to make money.
Yes.
And if they're looking at that and saying the best way for us to make money is to shift away from this type of product.
You mean
and shift
Konami doesn't
this.
Care about me and my feelings?
Yeah, exactly. They do not.
Oh.
Actually, they specifically put in a statement, Derek Teague, we don't care about you or your feelings.
Just your dollar bills, y'all.
That's right. That's right. But anyway, yeah, Konami, I'm with you. They're not completely, they're not some kind of big villain. But oftentimes where there's smoke, there's fire. So there are some shady things that happened there, probably on both sides. You're right. Overall, it's just kind of it was big news. It was a lot of chatter around that. We'll never really know all the behind the scenes unless someone documented it and at some point we'll release it. I don't think we'll ever really know who did what and
I'm
how.
I'm sure there's documents that are locked in place that there will never speak of this ever publicly. I'm sure Kojima's his only way he could break away was probably to sign off on some legal document saying he's not allowed to ever speak of this.
Yeah, So that was shady, but not again. It's not like it didn't change my life. A lot of their properties they've kind of been quiet on for a while anyway. So
I was
going
to say Konami's kind of been dead to me anyways. Not
right.
The games you mentioned, I am in agreement with, except Castlevania. I don't care about it. But the other ones I really liked. And I just, in fact, while you were listing them off, I'm like, oh, that's Konami. Oh, I forgot that was Konami. And you forget how big of a developer slash publisher they were until you go back to their history. But yeah, to me, it's definitely a story worth talking about. It's definitely one worth forming opinions on. But it's not one I care about personally because I'm not a fanboy of Kojima or anything Konami produces.
Well, I don't think I'm a fanboy either because, like I said, I haven't necessarily followed every single thing that he's done. I skipped Metal Gear Solid 4. I haven't played some of the side Metal Gear Solid things they've put out, whether it's... I feel like there's a few Metal Gear Solid games that I'm blanking out on at the moment that weren't official numbered games in the series that I never really followed. So I wasn't a big fanboy of the series or Kojima himself. I haven't played all of his side projects either. I never did get around to trying out PT. So that being said, I am looking forward to seeing what he does with Sony, with Kojima Productions, teaming up with Sony. I'm curious to see how that plays out. That doesn't have to be something we dig into too much, but in December, that partnership was announced, and there was a really awkward video of, I think it was Andrew House, was it? It was one of the guys from Sony, kind of lovingly looking at Kojima on the couch while Kojima talked about, it was very vague, like, yeah, we're going to do this thing with Sony, it's going to be great, and... Dude, I don't think we're going to see anything from them for years. So it's exciting. It's kind of cool. It was a cool way to send out the year. Like, wow, big win for Sony. And maybe
I think the only way we would see something semi-quick is if, and again, he can't take Silent Hills, but if he has rights or ownership of what he had already started, I don't know how far they were into Silent Hills. And then names it something else and makes subtle changes that has nothing to do with Silent Hill. You might see a horror game from him. Again, that's just speculation. I imagine they're just going to go completely different. And I will say there is some excitement to see Kojima do something besides Metal Gear, really.
Yeah.
I'd like to see him get away from it.
I'm a fan of that series. Each one of those main entry games. So 1, 2, 3, and 5 are the main games of the Metal Gear Solid series that I've played. Each one of them has brought some great things to the table, and each one of them has mechanics that are second to none in a lot of ways. So, yeah, that'll be interesting to see what he does there. I'm okay with him being a perfectionist and taking his time. There's plenty of games between now and whenever that game comes out for us to enjoy. So that'll be interesting to see. What happened? So what else happened in 2015 that you want to highlight?
One of my big ones would be Final Fantasy VII Remake. Let me first of all specify, I've never beaten Final Fantasy VII. I know. go ahead, boo me.
You are the worst.
And so here's another great story for you. And it involves my cousin. My cousin really should listen to the show. I talk about him a lot. His name's Daniel.
He's the real star.
Yeah, he actually is. So, Daniel owned a PlayStation. I actually did get the PlayStation day one. Thank you, Mom. My mom bought it for me for my birthday. She pre-ordered it way before. I knew I was getting it. And then when it launched, I got it. So, anyways, back then, though, I played sports games, racing games. You know, I don't even know what my age was. What, didn't we just have the 20-year anniversary? So I was probably 15. So, you know, I was 15. I didn't really play anything besides those. So my cousin and I used to, on the Super NES, I used to watch him play JRPGs. And then I think it was Secret of Mana, whatever its name is, actually had co-op, and then I think I used to play with him on that one. But I never, again, was really into JRPGs. Long story short, the launch of Final Fantasy VII's coming. My cousin's now in my ear. This is a great game. You gotta have it. You need to buy it. So I buy it. And again, this is back when I don't have money, so I'm buying this game I think it was a birthday or Christmas gift, something like that. I don't think I got it day one. I got it when, you know, it was available for one of those special moments. So I use my, I'm going to say birthday money on this dang game. And so I get it. And again, not being a JRPG guy, I have no idea what I'm getting myself into. I start playing it, and the combat's where you hit a button, but then nothing happens.
Right.
And then there's like this time meter, and
you're taking turns,
and I don't know what the heck's going on. So,
yeah.
Long story short, I hated it. I played about 30 seconds of that game and was like, burn it. Send it to hell. And I put back in my Konami baseball game or whatever was out.
You know? Oh, Konami.
I'm pretty sure. I wasn't even just trying to make a joke. I think I had a Konami baseball game back there. I think it was like in the big inning or something, ninth inning, something like that.
I think you're right.
So, I wasn't into that at all. Well, why is this a big story to me? Well, I've changed. I like JRPGs, and Final Fantasy VII is definitely a game that I would love to play and beat. I actually started it when they released it on the PS4. I'm about 10 hours into it. Will I ever beat it? Who knows? But the remake has me more interested, especially the little bit they're showing, because it's beautiful. It's actually gorgeous. And the combat kind of looks like it's going to be like what I see from 15, kind of. So that makes me even more interested, because I played the demo of 15. I don't know. Did you play the demo of 15?
I did not, and I wish I had, because everyone's talking about it, but no,
it's
I haven't played the demo.
It's pretty sweet. Like, when I first got the demo, I was like, oh, I don't know if I like this, you know, because I guess that's kind of how I feel about almost everything. But then, as I kept playing, I was like, all right, I'm kind of grasping what they're asking me to do here, or how I get to the point where I can defeat enemies. And so the potential of Final Fantasy VII having that combat, and then kind of I won't say it will be an open world, but open areas, that's pretty awesome. So I'm definitely hyped about that. I became a Final Fantasy, I won't say fanboy. I know there's people that I talk to on Facebook that are at a way, way higher level. But anytime there's a new Final Fantasy game, I eat it up now. So, and it started.
We're coming
with Final
up on
Fantasy
the 19th anniversary. I just had to look it up to make sure.
Yeah, why I think Episode 1 is going to launch on the 20-year anniversary. That is my prediction. Are we doing predictions?
January,
is this a
January
prediction
31st.
Show?
January 31st.
Would you like 31st. Me to do a prediction show?
Yeah, please.
Okay, that's my first prediction. So if you could just go ahead and write that down, because I don't do writing stuff down.
Yeah, don't worry, I wrote it down.
And with my first prediction, Episode 1 will release on the 20-year anniversary of Final Fantasy VII, and I think that's pretty cool. So yeah,
so
that was a big
story. So you think
it'll
come out either on or around January 31st, 2017. That's your prediction.
Yeah, I don't know if it'll come out that day, just because the industry is a little bit different.
Yep.
First of all, that's a little early, and I don't think they're very far into Episode 1. And I think also, you don't release a big title like that in January. You could get away with it with a game like Dying Light or, you know, some of these other titles that are coming out this year in January, but a Final Fantasy game, to me, has to launch.
I think it needs
to launch in the fall. So I think it's just going to be the year, not the day, the year. So go ahead and write that down.
I was excited to see that announced at E3 too. So I agree with you. That was a pretty big moment this year. So, I mean, I did play 7 back on the PS1. I did actually beat it because that's what you do when you play a game. You play it through to completion.
Thank you, Tim Nestor.
So it was very good. Loved that game. Did I play through twice? I don't know. But I remember doing everything you could in that game, getting all the summons and everything else and all the materia, beating all the ultimate weapons and all that.
I will add that I do love turn-based role-playing games now.
You do now?
I freely
do. You didn't before.
Yeah. And we might touch on this game later, but the game that got me into it, because I had another one of those moments, was Knights of the Old Republic. I bought that game because... Not my cousin this time, it was my brother. He's a huge Star Wars fan. And he was like, Coder looks pretty cool. And I was like, I don't know what Coder is. And he's like, it's a Star Wars game where it's like you're in an open world. And back then, this was what we would consider open world. Open areas, open world, and you can just do anything you want. So in my brain, and this is just what I remember thinking this. This is all crystal clear to me. It's like, I'm going to buy this game. And I'm going to be able to run around in the streets and just, like, chop people in half with my...
Lightsaber. Yeah, whatever you want.
I'm just going to be able to do whatever I want. And so I buy the game and I start playing it and I'm like, okay, I can't interact with this person.
That was your disappointing game of your lifetime, basically.
Yeah, it became the game that opened me up to RPGs and made me fall in love with them. But again, it did have that initial reaction where I was like, oh... Why do I hit the action button and my guy is just standing there?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I loved Final Fantasy. I loved KOTOR too. I love that. I never did play the second one though. I should. Final Fantasy VII was a great game. I have not played it. They did re-release it, like you talked about earlier, in December. I think it was right after the PlayStation Experience there at the beginning of December. And they released it with trophy support, the original version, old graphics and everything, on PS4. So that's pretty cool. It's something that I've considered going back into, but with the remake seemingly being right around the corner, if not this year, then probably next year, I'm kind of leaning towards staying away from all things Final Fantasy VII. That way, when I experience it, I won't have any kind of...
They're going to make changes, though. I'm not just talking about like gameplay and stuff. I have a feeling they're going to change a lot more than we realize.
Well, and so my keeping it kind of in the back of my mind, a distant memory, might be better for me then. So when I get to the remake, there's not as much like, hey, that's not how it was. Like, maybe I'll have a more of appreciation for it by, you know, having not as fresh memory of it. So, but yeah, no, that was definitely one of the bigger stories this year. One of the other ones that jumped out at me was when, during the E3 press conference, Microsoft announced backwards compatibility, and we don't spend a lot of time on this because I don't own an Xbox One, but this is one of those things that took me one step closer to being interested in an Xbox One.
They're Xbox backwards One
compatible
ten.
with 360 games. Not only the discs, but also the live arcade games. And that's one of the things that has kept my 360 plugged in, is I've got a big library of downloaded games. Like I talked about earlier, Castle Crashers, but many, many other games on their Xbox Live Arcade that I've downloaded and I don't want to let go of. I don't want to just put it away and have no access to those games anymore. So that announcement was a pretty big deal. I don't know if it's worth necessarily digging too much more into other than that, but that was a pretty big deal, I thought.
I mean, the only thing I'll add is, as somebody who owns an Xbox 360, I won't sell it because it's the Gears of War 3 edition and it's gorgeous. But I also own an Xbox One. It was pretty awesome when they launched the games, and I would go to my... you don't have an Xbox One, so I'll try to explain it. If you go to the game section, you slide all the way to the right, it shows you games that are ready to download. So it's games you own that you've chosen not to download yet. And so when I would when I slid over there the first time and I saw Mass Effect and, you know, some of the other games that released, and I'm like, holy crap, I now have it on the Xbox One. I mean, it still looks like so cool. a 360 game.
Yeah.
But it's really awesome that I don't have to, because I don't, I have my 360 hooked up, but it's actually in my boys' room. So I don't play it, I don't touch it, I don't look at it. And so now I don't have to worry about it, because everything that I bought digitally automatically goes now on my Xbox One, which is really cool, because towards the end of the 360's life cycle, not the very end, but towards the end, Microsoft started getting really good with like their sales, almost at Steam level. I'm not going to say it was at Steam level, because it's not. But they were selling like a lot of classics, like Mass Effect for $5, Mass Effect 2 for $5, Resident Evil 4 for $5. So I bought all those games. I own hundreds of Xbox 360 games digital, because every one that I saw, even if I owned a hard copy, for around $5-$10, I bought it. And then now I've sold most of the hard copies to buy next-gen stuff. So, or current-gen, I should say. So now I have all these games coming on my Xbox One, and that's pretty freaking awesome. Like, in fact, in a couple weeks, Deus Ex will be on my Xbox One. Love that game. So that'll be pretty cool.
Yeah, I thought that was a huge announcement. Great, great move by Microsoft, too, with the way that Sony's been making so many great moves over the last 2 or 3 years to position themselves to retake the lead. And I think Microsoft, that was a pretty sneaky and a pretty good move, strategic move, to kind of outpace what Sony's been doing with the PlayStation Now subscription service. It was like a one-up on what they were doing. So even though it didn't give them the lead or really gain any ground for them from what we can see in terms of console sales this year, it still earned them a whole bunch of love from the gamers and the community. So that
was good. And that's definitely something that they needed. You know, they needed something that set them apart from the PS4. Again, like you said, and I 100% agree, it didn't really change sales at all. I know, I think they won October. I think it was October.
Yeah,
it
with been Halo, November. They did, yeah.
Okay, so they won October and then went back to losing, you know, in sales. And that was with Halo 5 releasing and Rise of the Tomb Raider coming in November and stuff like that. But point is it was good PR for them, and they definitely need it. And hopefully they'll continue to do stuff like that. And I do like that Sony, won't go on to it too much, kind of came back and said, hey, well, now we're going to release PS2 games. Now, granted, you have to buy them, which I don't want to sound like an entitled jerk, so I don't think it's a bad thing that you have to buy them. It's just I'm not a big fan of the price point. I understand it. I've heard discussions on it, but $15 a pop for games that, I don't know. Maybe if it was Final Fantasy X, I would, but Final Fantasy X already has a remake, so a remaster, so I already have that. But stuff like that is the only way I would pay $15.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. And they couldn't do PS3 because that would undercut their subscription service they're trying to continue to, in some ways, at least support. So,
I think that will
I think that Sony did what they could to respond with the PS2 games. I think you're right about that. I don't think the price point's too ridiculous, except for the fact that, for the most part, you can get a PlayStation 2 and a lot of those games for less than that right now. Like, they're not hard to find still, whether it's a gaming store or some sort of pawn shop or even just online Craigslist. They're not that hard to find.
And I think the only thing, and I know some people that would be listening right now would be like, but Derek, they give you trophies. So yes, let me mention that.
Yeah,
you do get trophies for these games.
That's a big deal.
The graphics are a little bit better. I think they up-resed them all to 1080p, so that's nice. So, yeah, there is a selling point, and again, I want to make sure I'm very clear. Don't think $15 is bad if you're a fan. It's just nothing they've released so far. It's something I would go, yep, I'll pay $15. And I'm a Twisted Metal fanboy, and I wouldn't even buy Twisted Metal Black for $10. I figure I'll just wait until it goes on sale. They'll have a PSN sale. And if they do those games for 50% off, I will definitely buy, I'll list them off real quick, Twisted Metal Black. I'll buy all the Grand Theft Autos they released, Vice City 3 and San Andreas. And then I will definitely buy Rogue.
Dark Cloud.
I believe it's Rogue Galaxy.
Is it Rogue Galaxy?
I could be saying that one wrong, but I believe it is.
They also got Dark Cloud they put out?
Yeah. I never played Dark Cloud, though. But I never played, and I, if I'm getting this wrong, I apologize, Rogue Galaxy. I believe that's the name of it. But they after I saw they released, I went and did a little research on them, and I was like, that looks like the type of game I would like, which maybe back in the PS2 days I wouldn't. Cause, and I'm not going to get in a long tangent story, I can share it another time. But Final Fantasy X was kind of the game that got me into JRPGs on the PS2, so I kind of ignored anything before that.
Yeah, well, that makes sense. I mean, I think Dark Cloud did come before that. It was one of, I don't know if it was a launch title, but I know it was early in the PS2 life. So
now, is Dark Cloud turn-based action? Do you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember playing... I can't remember if it was Dark Cloud 1 or 2. I remember playing it. I remember liking it, but not loving it. It just... I was spoiled on games like Final Fantasy. You know, you just kind of get used to a certain level of quality and depth, and they just didn't have that. But they were good. They were decent. It's kind of nice to revisit some of those old classics. But you know what? And more as soon as I said, you know, you could always go buy a PS2 and old games. Then I thought about it. I wouldn't want to do that. I'd much rather pay a little bit more for the convenience of having it digitally available on my PS4 and don't have to plug in a new system. Like, that's incredibly convenient. So yeah, I could see paying $15-$20 to make sure you have this game in your digital library ready to go whenever you feel like playing it. So yeah, I have no problem with that price point either. It'd be cool to see them put out more games more frequently. I know they're starting to roll out a few more, it sounds like, this week, but yeah, we'll see if that happens. I mean, the PS2 has one of the biggest game catalogs out there, so we'll see if if they do better than Nintendo did with the Virtual Console.
That's what I was going to say. As I really hope they support it and support it like consistently. I know, and I don't know if you remember this, on the Xbox 360, they started releasing Xbox games, and I think it failed because they kind of stopped pretty abruptly. I know there was at least 10 or 15, maybe more, that released, and they were also at about $15 a piece, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, that sounds about right. A few were 20 even.
Yeah, so, yeah, I remember buying like Jade Empire. I had to own Jade Empire. Love Jade Empire.
All right, well, another big story this year. I'm just going to keep moving on through 15 to 2015. A few of these stories aren't really that meaningful or big to me, but they still were big stories, and this is one of those, and that is that home consoles were now allowed to launch in China, which they weren't before. Now, there were home consoles in China. They were sold in one way, shape, or form, but now they're actually legal, and so that's actually gives incentive to companies to sell there and to Chinese retailers to make sure that they're available. So I have actually not heard much follow-up on that news story since then, but I remember when that broke, like, hey, this is actually legal to sell these here now. So that's a huge market, especially in technology. So I know there's a big PC gaming market over there in China, and I'm curious as to how the home consoles have impacted that or added on to that. But that was a pretty big deal when they announced that. Do you live in China?
Yeah, absolutely. I ship all my stuff from, is it the United States? Yeah, I don't know.
Nailed it. I'm going to cut you off before you become extremely racist.
I had to stop that voice because I was like, oh, somebody's going to get upset. So, yeah.
No, let's do it. Let's be as racist as we can. That'll be fun. The Taken King came to Destiny. And that, it took a game that was pretty polarizing. It was pretty dividing for a lot of people. A lot of people loved it.
Whiners.
Most people were, I thought, pretty mediocre on it in their opinion of it, and then there were some people who absolutely hated it to the point that it just seemed ridiculous.
I had never
played Destiny. It was one of those games that I was like, yeah, maybe I'll play it at some point. The Taken King pulled in players like me, and there were thousands, I don't know if millions is the right number, but there were so many people that jumped back into Destiny with the Taken King for many, many reasons. Now, I want to give you a chance to talk about Destiny since you had played it from day one back in 2014. Yeah. And you had a lot of time with it. You enjoyed it then, but you enjoyed it even more with Taken King. So tell me about how Destiny went from, you know, whatever, vanilla Destiny, old Destiny, to what it is now.
All right, first of all, I want to share my opinion on people's opinion of Destiny.
Ooh, this is going to be good.
Yes. First of all, anybody who thinks the original Destiny game sucked is invalid. They do not matter.
As humans.
Yes. They do not count at all. Even some of my friends say that, and I've blocked them from Facebook and from calling me. But no, I will say this. The original Destiny game gets hated on a lot. I found personally a lot of value in it. just from a fun standpoint, yeah, do you repeat yourself? Sure, and we can get into that. But it's just a fun game. Like, I loved Borderlands, and I found that in Borderlands, I kind of repeated the process, but I did it because I wanted that cool new gun that was really really powerful and that could blow people up. And that's kind of what I became addicted to in Destiny. So when they would add new, you know, strikes or raids or whatever, that was great, but I was already basically in love with what they had already brought.
Now, didn't Borderlands do what Destiny didn't in terms, like, you made the comparison, so it just came to my mind, where Borderlands has a colorful, not only world, but also characters and a story that's there. I know the stories of Borderlands 1 and 2, it's not necessarily the best story ever, but it is compelling enough to keep going, and there's some really colorful characters throughout. Do you feel like Destiny lacked enough in that area that it just, that's one of the reasons it was looked down on, is because it hit those same notes as Borderlands, but it just didn't measure up in other ways?
I will say this. I didn't do a lot of research into Destiny. When I say research, I probably researched it more than most people, but I didn't, like, overanalyze it. And the reason I don't do that anymore with any game. Once I have established that I like it, I just buy it. I don't watch videos, read articles, and the reason why is because I don't want to overhype things. And I think what happened with Destiny is a lot of people, and this is just from having lots of conversations online, a lot of people thought they were getting a first-person shooter slash Borderlands slash Mass Effect. And what I mean by that is you've got Borderlands side of it, which is going to have your loot system and you're leveling up and all that, combined with a Mass Effect epic story and universe, and lore, I should say, as well. And so a lot of people felt burnt or deceived when Destiny came out, and that's not what they got. Now, when I initially played Destiny, I was kind of, I guess I was kind of like them too, where I was like, oh, I thought there was more to this. But then I just kept playing it, and I got into the hook, and I was like, oh, this is like an MMO, kinda. So
yeah,
I like
it. Now that you said that, that's what I always thought. When I first started reading about Destiny and kind of seeing what it was all about, I thought, oh, okay, this is a Halo MMO.
Yeah.
They just can't say Halo because they don't own the rights to Halo. So I just thought, Halo MMO, it is what it is. Maybe I'll play it someday.
It's all about perspective. And I do think some people, and again, I'm not going to crap on them even though I just did say that they're all invalid, did go into it with the wrong point of view. And that could be Activision's fault. That could be Bungie's fault, because a lot of them said, well, when I read this article or I watched this video, they said it was going to have this epic story. And okay, so yeah, that's false advertising to a certain extent, as far as they didn't deliver on that end. But what The Taken King did is it did deliver that. I think it did bring, I won't say it's at Borderlands level. I am a Borderlands fanboy. It doesn't have that campaign with awesome characters, awesome world. Mm-hmm.
It's got, Borderlands has style that Destiny completely lacks.
Yeah. And Destiny and The Taken King kind of upped it. And the big thing that they upped it with is they brought in characters I cared about.
Yeah.
And they started giving me missions where I actually knew what I was doing. I won't say I cared about them, but I would say that I actually knew why I was doing them. And like I said,
a little more context for all the action.
Yes. And then having, I forgot his name. I know you know it.
Nathan Fillion from
having
Firefly.
Nathan Fillion talk to me
he was perfect.
The entire time and making me laugh made it so much more enjoyable. So,
and you know what? And you can keep talking about Taken King. So I'm not to move on to the next thing, but I was disappointed when I heard about and then actually went on YouTube to watch clips and listen when I heard Peter Dinklage's performance as the ghost, the little sidekick who floats beside you and kind of helps you and helps scan stuff.
Yeah.
When I heard his performance and then read more about how that came to be, I was so disappointed because I'm a big fan of that actor. I think he is perfect for the role of Tyrion in Game of Thrones. I think he's been good in other movies that I've seen him in, you know, even Elf. So I was just really disappointed by that when I heard that. So another big news item this year, and this kind of wraps into Taken King as well, was his voice work was completely replaced. I mean, do you feel like that was part of what improved the overall game experience? Was his voice work so bad that it took away from the experience?
For me personally, no. And that was because when I actually heard the first time I heard Peter Dinklage, I didn't overreact or anything, but I was kind of like, oh, he's kind of bland. And a lot of it was the writing was pretty bland, too. But when I heard Nolan North's version, the very first time I heard it, I was actually disappointed. I was like, this guy sounds terrible. They've done this terrible effect on his voice. But then as I kept playing it, maybe it was just one of those, you know how sometimes, maybe this is just me, but I'm going to guess you've experienced this. You hear a song maybe from one of your favorite bands, and so you kind of like expect it to be really good because they're a really good band. And then you, at first when you hear it, you're like, ah, this kind of sucks, or I don't really like it.
I'll take your word for it. I don't like music, but go ahead.
Okay, cool. But
just kidding.
Maybe the song is a little, you know, different than what they've produced before. And so you listen to it and you're like, I'm not a fan. But then as you keep listening to it and you kind of get used to what one of your favorite bands is now doing and that their sound is different, but it's still them, you kind of adjust to it and you kind of end up liking it more. Yeah, I would say that's what happened with Nolan North. I didn't like it at first. I preferred Peter Dinklage. And I wouldn't say the writing was exactly upped for Nolan North, especially since he did record just a lot of the old lines from Peter Dinklage. I don't even think they changed any of his lines. But
not for the opening, at least, because I played the demo this past winter, you know, when Dinklage's voice was still there. And then I played The Taken King again when I bought it in September. And I didn't memorize the script or anything, but to me, the experience was pretty identical.
Yeah.
Just for me personally. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he just recorded it verbatim. So I would say over time, yes, I totally prefer Nolan North. I do think he does a better job. I don't think it impacts The Taken King's better because of Nolan North. No, I think if Peter Dinklage was still there, I would still say The Taken King is good. It's a step in the right direction. The game is already amazing to me. I'm kind of, I'll admit, getting burnout. I haven't played it in months. I actually logged in today on my Xbox One copy just so I could get my 15 Strange Coins, but I didn't actually play the game. I just got the Strange Coins and shut it off.
Yeah, I enjoyed my time with it. I think we played it together, you know, a group of us on and off for, maybe like a month and a half, which to me was about what I get out of most games I buy anyway. So that's not to say I won't ever come back and play it, but I did enjoy it. I mean, the mechanics are sharp. The movement's fun. I thought the visuals were really good. It's a good-looking game. It doesn't have the style of something like a Borderlands, but I don't necessarily want every game to have that kind of really cool, modern, Mad Max-y looking style like Borderlands does. Like, I want games to look different. I like it set in space. You know, you feel like you're on the moon when you're on the moon, and there's nothing really to criticize in terms of the presentation in Destiny. I think it's pretty sharp. I like the loot system. I had a lot of fun with it, and if it really is that big of an improvement over older Destiny, then maybe I wouldn't have been as big of a fan of the older version of Destiny, because I liked Taken King a lot. I didn't love it to the point where I couldn't stop playing it. I liked it a lot.
And I don't think, from gaming with you as much as I have, I would say you probably would have kind of liked it. But yeah. I think The Taken King is definitely better.
Yeah.
Like, in all areas.
Yeah, and I think universally everyone agrees in 2015 Destiny went to the next level. It went from being, that had potential and maybe they'll do a follow-up, to all of a sudden, oh, okay, there's actually a big community for this game now. Like, people are getting back into it. So, and it seems like it's still running pretty strong now. So,
I think what hurts Destiny the most is the fact that it's a plan to be like this 10-year game. I think that actually hurts it rather than helping it. And I say that because I think Destiny could have been a Star Wars / Mass Effect loot-driven amazing epic tale game, and I do think Bungie and Activision said, look, we're going to make this game that plays phenomenal, but we're going to release it kind of bare bone, not completely, I'm not going to exaggerate like other people, but we're going to kind of, because we're going to have enough content for the next 10 years, so we're going to release every year a new expansion, a new version, whatever. So I think they purposely did that, and I think it kind of screwed them on being what it really could have been. And I would really love to play a Mass Effect / Star Wars type of game like that, but actually really pulls off the RPG and epic tale portion of it.
All right, so if we're going to keep going with this, I don't know, this pattern of trying to make you make predictions so we can laugh at you when you're wrong, will they make Destiny 2? Will there be a Destiny 2, and what year will it come out?
It's coming out in 2016.
Wow, that's a bold prediction.
Destiny September 2016.
Okay, all right. File that under never going to happen. Okay, got it. Thanks for taking this seriously. All right, so...
At least you wrote it down.
I wrote that one down, too. Keeping track. PS4 dominated sales this year in terms of console sales. Xbox One was still an impressive system in terms of sales numbers, or at least in terms of units shipped, I believe is what Microsoft shares. Unit shipped to retailers.
I gotta share this real quick. I apologize for cutting you off, but I thought was pretty funny. So you started talking about Sony sales, and I just said as a joke, Sony Pony, and then I don't know if you heard in the background a weird noise. My Xbox One just turned on.
Xbox on.
Yeah, but I said Sony Pony.
What?
Okay. I don't understand it. Yeah, my Halo 5 Xbox One made its weird, like, Halo noise, and I was like, dude, I said Sony Pony. I don't know. Maybe I made it angry. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, you got to watch out for that. That thing, it's a Transformer.
I thought it was pretty funny.
No big-name fall exclusives for the PS4 this year. Now, there were... That's not to say there were no great games that came out for PS4 this fall. I mean, we had the Uncharted Collection. We had some surprise games like Until Dawn come out. And then some smaller games that maybe didn't get as much attention. Tales of Zestiria being one of them. Divinity Original Sin, the Enhanced Edition, came out. There were some great games that were only on PS4 this fall. But there weren't those big... make a big poster of it and put it on the wall at Walmart or, you know, kiosk and GameStop type games for the PS4. And other than October, like we talked about earlier, it dominated sales each month, especially when it came to the big months like November. And now we just recently learned December.
All right. So I'm going to give my opinion on why I think the PlayStation 4 continues to sell like that.
Yeah. I was going to ask you, what's the deal there? Why is the PS4? Why is Sony having such a big lead right now?
Okay, so here's my thing, and I've said this before on Facebook and chats and all this stuff, and people usually just, you know, shake their heads like you're an idiot. But first of all, it goes back to 2013. Am I in the right year? Yeah, 2013, the E3.
Right.
And again, I want to make sure I say this and am very clear. I am not saying all of Sony's success is from Microsoft's mistake. I just believe that's the starting point. Okay. I believe Microsoft screwed themselves and really, really, really helped and pushed Sony and the PlayStation 4 at 2013 E3.
Let's set the stage real quick. 2013, that fall, is when the PS4 and Xbox One both released.
Yes.
And so that spring and summer prior to that is when we had already known these systems were in development and some news had leaked out. But the reveal of these systems happened early in the first half of 2013. So that's what you're talking about, right? You're talking about that May reveal of Xbox One from, or maybe it was April, from Microsoft.
Yeah, I think they did it in April or May. I want to say it was May, just because it was like a month before the E3.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was in May, and their messaging starting in May and all through E3 was god awful.
Yeah, agreed. Totally agree.
It was just terrible, and it was very arrogant. It was kind of like what you were talking about with the PlayStation 3, how you watched the E3 when they were launching, advertising the PS3, and they come out and drop the $600 bombshell. That's kind of what Microsoft did. First of all, you know, I'm not going to go on a long tangent, but just to kind of give a quick overview, the pricing at $500, although I bought mine day one, and I would still do it. I mean, hey, I spent $650 on a 360. $500 on an Xbox One is not a big deal.
Let's not revisit all your poor decisions.
But forcing you to buy an Xbox One with a Kinect, while I personally had no issue with it, I know tons of people that absolutely hated that they were being forced to buy a Kinect, because going back to what I talked about earlier with the Kinect on 360, it wasn't that great of a product. It wasn't terrible.
Yeah, that's where they lost me, was the Kinect. The price point was okay, but the Kinect was...
It was not a good product on the 360. It was average at best. Now, the Xbox One version of the Kinect is a good product. They actually sell it separate, and I've seen it on sale for $99.99. And if somebody owned an Xbox One and did not have that, and they were like, well, should I get it? I would say yes. Not for the games, mainly because of what just happened 2 seconds ago where I said Sony Pony and my Xbox One just turned on. So I like the voice commands and stuff like that. But going back to...
the features can be kind of neat. And I remember thinking, hey, some of these features are kind of cool. But in general, I was like, is this expensive because of this camera tech that they're making you attach with this? I don't know. So I was a hard sell. Again, like you've said, I'm a hard sell on a lot of things. But I was a hard sell for the Xbox One the same way I was for the PS3.
Yes.
You know, the messaging just lost me.
It was terrible. And there was a lot of arrogance, and there was a lot of forcing consumers to do things the way Microsoft saw the future. Now, the way they saw the future was not a bad thing. It's just the way they went about it, and that's forcing the consumer to do it. So there's the Kinect. There's the forcing you to be always online. If you're not online, you had to do, I believe at the original time it was announced, it was a 24-hour check-in. So let's say Tim Nestor has his Xbox One. He finally gave in and he bought it, and he's playing online, and his internet goes out. And he has the weekend off, and he wants to play, but he has no internet connection for the next 48 hours. His Xbox One would become a brick after 24 hours and not allow him to play games because
that
it didn't check.
That was terrifying. I remember hearing about that. Yep, I remember that. And that was like, whoa, that's going to happen. I mean, you lose internet not all the time, but enough.
Well, you see with the attacks on PSN and Xbox Live, we're getting them now. If that would have happened and that was enforced, you're punishing consumers for something that you can't even keep up. And Xbox Live does a great job, and even Sony has improved with PSN, but they do go down. They do get attacked, and they're not always running. But anyways, my point is...
Think about this, too. Let me think about this, too. When you... Let's say that you've got this horrible blizzard that comes in, just like you experience in Florida all the time. So you get this blizzard that comes in, and it snows your whole family in. The kids are off of school. There's no way you can make it into work. Let's just stay at home today.
Yeah,
and maybe you don't lose power. Maybe cable goes out. Maybe some power line, a cable line gets cut. Something happens, and you lose access to internet. And all you want to do is you're kind of shut in with your family, and you're gonna game with your new system. Something as simple as cable's down right now. You know, Time Warner or Comcast, whoever your provider is they're tripping over themselves or having problems. Or your power, I mean, I guess not power, but for some reason you don't have internet connection, it's not working. Or maybe you just moved and you are waiting for them to come install your internet. You have a week to kill. So you want to work your way through some single player stuff. Just thinking through those scenarios that I have actually been in. You know, we've moved a lot. I've had those situations where internet's gone out. Hey, you know what? At least I've got my game system that I can fire up and play my games. Those types of scenarios, even just imagining them, were annoying enough for me to say, nope, I'm not interested in this unless they fix that issue.
Yeah.
And when they talked about games not being able to share them, and they're kind of like trying to undercut the used games industry, basically, by saying it sounded like each game is going to be tied to a system. Like the way they were talking about game sharing and
yeah, their games. Original plan was actually pretty cool, even though I'll admit, kind of like you, Tim, I was a little scared. Their original plan was to go more all digital. They wanted you to go all digital, and then they were going to have, and I could be wrong, they were going to have, like, family sharing, game sharing for your family, and I think it was up to, like, 3 to 5 people. I don't know, but, like, if I bought a game digitally, let's say I bought Halo 5, I think their original plan was if I had you and a couple other buddies as my family or friends, you guys would have access to that game. I would be the owner, but you'd be able to play it.
And I think we're heading there. Don't get me wrong. I mean, we're already seeing
it. I think
it'll
go there. Yes, it's just not there yet.
But I mean, if you go on Craigslist and are looking for some used game, or if you go, you know, GameStop and you want to look for their used game section, and all of a sudden an entire generation of console games aren't available because they won't work that way. You have to do digital sharing of some kind. I mean, we're just not ready for that yet as an industry. Like, as consumers, we're not there yet. That's too. It was too big of a step.
It was.
And I don't think it's a bad idea, but it was too much all at once. And so the consumers, and I was one of them, was like, "No, that's. I'm not ready for that yet. Like, I'm a budget gamer. At least I usually am. And so, no, that sounds awful to me.
Until you became my friend, and then I forced you to buy everything at $60.
Yeah, and now I'm making horrible decisions. So.
All right. So yes, I agree that they did that. Poorly, they were trying to force that.
Okay, so connecting that to this past year in 2015, that messaging that came out of Microsoft handicapped them. But then if you juxtapose that against the messaging out of Sony, which was probably one of the best E3 moments that I've ever seen, and I'm sure you were probably going to go here too. Sorry if I'm stealing your thunder. When Sony got up there and Jack Trenton was dropping just... I mean, he was just, if it was a boxing match, he was landing body blow after body blow and then the big knockout punch with everything from the price to how you share games. Like, that E3 from Sony, I don't even remember what games they announced because it was such a great console war-centered E3. It was great entertainment for people.
I mean, they had great games there, but it was more about... the consoles at that time.
Oh, it was great.
We had already seen, I think it was in January of that year, Sony had already did like this special presentation and it had like Killzone and I think Infamous was there. So we had already seen games, Knack, and all that. But the big thing, the big blows was taking what Xbox had done, everything they had done wrong, and we didn't cover them all because we're running long here. But they did a lot more wrong even that in their messaging. And then Sony coming back, and it's almost as if, and I know they didn't do this, maybe they did on a couple things, but it's almost like it was set up perfectly where every mistake Microsoft made, Sony had a counter. They had an answer, and they were unleashing, like you had said, these fists into Microsoft's face and just dropping them left and right because everything they said was everything a consumer wanted to hear. When Microsoft announced that they were releasing the Xbox One with the Kinect at $500 and you couldn't buy it separate, Sony comes out and says, well, we're going to sell ours for $400, and if you want a camera, we'll sell it, and we'll sell it to you for $60. So you're even still cheaper if you wanted a camera. Again, it's not at the same level, but it still does the basic things that a Kinect does. So Sony was just their messaging. And then at this time, just sharing personally, I was not a big digital gamer. I was always at GameStop and Best Buy buying games, trading games. Like, that's how I bought my consoles day one.
Yeah,
I bought
me too.
PS4 and Xbox One day one, and I didn't pay a dime for them. And what I mean by that is I didn't go in there and use a credit card or pay cash or anything. I traded in all these games, all these wheeling and dealing that I did, that I had over $1,000 in credit, and I just pre-ordered both of them. And so that's, even with them doing that and saying, hey, and I'm talking about Xbox here, them saying, hey, we're trying to get rid of used games in a way, that kind of made me think about not getting an Xbox One. Now, it didn't take long for me to go, oh, there's this little game called Killer Instinct coming out, so that's going to be a day one purchase. But if Killer Instinct wasn't there, I may have said, well, I'll just do the PS4 and get a bunch of games. But there was messaging issues, huge issues on the Xbox side, whereas Sony was just lights out. Absolutely. Yep.
And so, I mean, those things have ripple effects because even though Microsoft did a lot of course correction that year and then in the year that followed and the year that followed. So the next 2 years, they've been course correcting and changing their messaging. And really, I mean, I think Microsoft has done better than anybody at kind of reclaiming a lot of that lost ground. I mean, their fate was already kind of decided, at least for these first few years of this generation, and that is Sony's going to outpace you for a while. Now, Xbox One is doing fantastically. We've talked about that already.
Yeah.
But PS4 is dominating sales, and I think you're right. It all began in 2013 with the way those consoles were revealed. PS3 already had regained a ton of momentum building up to that. I mean, the PS3 was putting out blockbuster game after blockbuster game, so their momentum was catching up with the 360, and if I remember correctly, came pretty even with 360 in terms of total sales, and that momentum continued as their company, from the top all the way down, had learned somehow this is how we communicate to consumers and to gamers, and they nailed it.
And I think the PlayStation became what Nintendo used to be. And here's where I was driving at, and I'll get to it quicker now. It started in 2013. And what do I mean by PlayStation became what Nintendo used to be? Anybody, I'm a hardcore gamer. You're a cheap-ass gamer. But you're still hardcore. And so
hardcore-ass gamer. Yeah. Wait, actually, never mind.
Anybody who's hardcore like us, we know the ins and outs. We understand Xbox, Sony. But go talk to a soccer mom or somebody who just buys consoles for their kids or family members, so on, that doesn't do this research, doesn't watch E3, doesn't understand that. What the point I'm driving at is I believe Sony and their brand of PlayStation became Nintendo. When somebody would walk in a room and say, "What are you playing? Are you playing a Nintendo?" Like, I get people that still ask me, "What Nintendo am I playing?" Yep. And I'm like, "It's not a Nintendo. It's an Xbox One or a PlayStation 4. That's what PlayStation became. That when a soccer mom or whoever else walks into GameStop and they're buying a console for their son or whoever, they say, "I want PlayStation." That's the only thing they know. They don't know... Yeah. Xbox One. They don't know Nintendo Wii U. God, don't even get me started on Nintendo's messaging. But that's what I believe has driven it to this point. And that being said, it's not as simple as Microsoft screwed up and Sony became Nintendo. Sony has done a great job, absolutely great job, of constantly funneling out games. Now, we talked about how, well, they don't have any of these big hitters or didn't have any big hitters at times. That is 100% true. But I check 2014, 2015, 2016's gaming calendars, and there's a lot of titles that Sony puts out that Microsoft does not even come close to putting out. Some of them are smaller, some of them are niche, but they are constantly funneling out games, and they're reaching all types of audiences. So, in my opinion, that is why you're going to continue to see Sony dominate. They also have third-party support when it comes to like brands like Battlefront, Call of Duty, which has always been with Xbox One. And they all flipped for one reason. Sony has over 30 million consoles out there.
That's insane.
I'm going to say Xbox, Microsoft has 15 to 20. I think 20 is pushing it. I think it's closer to 15. So you're talking 2-1 right now. There's a reason why Sony's getting all these deals, that to the point where they can go to their first-party studios and say, "Hey, look, totally need your games, but you know what? We can hold off. If you need more time, take your time."
Yeah.
And you've got big hitters coming out this year. You got Uncharted in April. So,
2016 is looking amazing.
Which is definitely something I want to get to, is the 2015 and 2016 talk.